Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. We are brought to you today by Untuck It. Thank you for them for sponsoring the show, and thank you to you for joining on this episode of the show, one where we can actually finally talk about a win, Bulls fans. It was a win. It was an ugly win, a tough watch if you haven't watched it, but here today to talk with me about the Bulls' win against the Detroit Pistons is the co-host of the Cash Considerations podcast. I'm sure if you're listening to Bulls HQ, you're listening to Cash Considerations. He's Jason Patton. He joins me now. Jason, how are you, mate?
I'm doing well. I'm certainly doing much better than the Pistons. For as much as we like to crap on the Bulls and like the state of their rebuild and this general state of things, the Pistons look way worse somehow. So tonight's game was, Bulls won by 20, but it was like an ugly 20-point win.
Well, let me ask you, like, it was 109-89, a Bulls 20-point win. I think it was the largest win in Jim Boylan's career, or at least matched it. So I guess that's something. But as much as this was a Bulls win, was it as much as a Pistons loss to a degree as well? Like, you just mentioned how bad they were. Blake Griffin looked damn bad out there. I want to give, obviously, the Bulls credit for getting this win, but at the same time, man, the Pistons are bad.
Yeah, it was definitely a combination of both. Like, I don't think the Bulls played that well. They only shot 43%. They shot sub 43%. They did hit 14 threes, which was great. Lowry finally looked pretty good again. A big story, I guess, was Shaq Harrison starting, because Otto Porter Jr. is out for a few more weeks. Chandler Hutchinson had sore shins for some reason, and now he has no timetable. So he's got another injury. So Jim Boylan goes with football guy Shaq Harrison in the starting lineup, and he actually was great. Like, from the start, 15 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. He even made a 3-pointer. I mean, you know, he really can't shoot, but he made a 3. So he brought some nice energy. That was good to see. The Bulls played hard. They won the rebounding battle 55-46 as well. They shot well from 3, but a lot of, and I do have to give them some credit for their defense, holding the Pistons to sub 34% shooting and 8 of 33 from 3. But I mean, that's not all Bulls defense. I mean, the Pistons were just like out of it from like the very beginning. The Bulls jumped out to a 19-6 lead right from the start. You mentioned Blake Griffin. Now, he looked like, I mean, totally washed. I know he had the knee surgery. He missed the beginning of the year with the knee thing, and I think a hamstring issue as well. But I mean, it was just bizarre seeing how bad he was. Just no lift, no effort. He had 16 points on 4-15 shooting. He was a minus 26, 4 turnovers. So he was bad. Drummond, the Bulls broadcast even noticed how Drummond just kind of wasn't engaged. He fouled out in 34 minutes. He fouled Larry Markkanen twice on 3-pointers. One of them was called a flagrant foul. And they just got really nothing else. From their starting guard trio was Langston Galloway, Luke Kennard, Bruce Brown. Tony Snell was hurt. Reggie Jackson still out. Galloway had like one little stretch in the second quarter there where he hit a couple threes. But besides that, like, Derrick Rose off the bench, got some MVP chance, got some love. He had 18 points, and the Pistons actually were a plus 5 in his minutes. But like, besides Derrick, Pistons were a hot mess, and just in general, they're a hot mess. So, I mean, good on the Bulls for taking care of business against a really terrible opponent. There have been plenty of games so far this year already where they've not done that. So the fact that they won and won comfortably was good. They now have 2 wins against the Pistons. So I guess the Bulls can beat the Pistons at home. We've learned that from them so far this season. But didn't really learn that much from this game, other than like maybe it was good to see Lowry break out of his slump and Shaq Harrison. But Jim Boylan loves him because he played football and he tries really hard.
Yeah, I guess that's what makes this game sort of confusing to a degree, because the defense, whilst it was okay, at the same time, Blake Griffin had no lift at all. So blocking his shots or getting to or contesting his shots is made that much easier. And like you mentioned, Andre Drummond just did not look like he wanted to play basketball tonight for whatever reason. I guess part of that is on the Bulls, but at the same time, maybe that's just Drummond doing some Drummond things, which I guess he hasn't been doing that much this season. He actually has been pretty good this season. But yeah, he looked disinterested. And beyond Derrick Rose, this Pistons team is super bad. And yeah, it was actually quite confronting watching them. And I was actually thankful to be a Bulls fan for once, watching a team who executes a lot worse at this point. So, but yeah, it's just weird as well, because the Bulls defense is probably, and you were mentioning this on Twitter, but they're going to be probably, if not top 10, then maybe top 12 in sort of defensive rating. So the Pistons largely are going to help that metric look a lot healthier than what it is. But at the same time, the Bulls have been a team that are like bottom 10 in terms of giving up a three. So they allow so many threes, but somehow they're like 7th in the league in 3-point percentage from an opponent's perspective. So that number will improve tonight as well, given that the Pistons only made 8 of their 33 threes. So there is a bit of luck going on with the Bulls defense, but at the same time, we will take this win because this would typically be that type of win where the Bulls would have thrown it away in pass. So I guess that is a win in itself, but you mentioned it there. The big storyline out of this game was the fact that Lauri Markkanen looks somewhat normal.
Yeah, it was about time. It's been really depressing watching Lowry lately. Like the game against the Bucks last game, he just really struggled again. I mean, just all season basically. Since that big first game against the Hornets where he put up what it was like 35-17, it's just been really ugly. He hasn't been able to shoot threes. He's just been like he's looked soft. His decision making has been brutal. His ball handling when he's tried to take the ball to the rim, he's been getting stripped all the time. We did see this again today where he again tried another just like ridiculous dunk attempt. Like you can say that, oh, it's good. He's being aggressive. But like, I feel like every game he's like been trying to dunk from like midway through the paint on somebody and it just gets either blocked back in his face or he stuffs it against the rim. That did happen again in this game. But in general, the fact that he had 24 points on 7 of 14 shooting, he actually shot well from three. He got a great shooter's bounce. To start this game where he bricked it off the back of the rim and it went super high and then somehow fell in. So that had maybe a little karma, he's missed so many open threes, so just getting a little good luck there was nice to see. He also went 7 for 11 from the free throw line, so that was good. He has been getting the line more than usual, so that's been nice. He didn't really do much else. Like you could say he played good defense against Blake Griffin. I'm pretty sure he did stone him, but basically Blake Griffin was playing defense against himself out there. Lowry didn't have any assists, which has been a problem. So he's really just not much. He's just more of like the spot up shooting type, but he did do some nice stuff off the dribble as well. So overall, like I'll take the baby steps because he has looked so bad. Obviously, I know a lot of people are concerned about what kind of ceiling he has now, the way we've seen it. Again, not a great performance. 24-6, no assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks isn't like outstanding, but it's a step in the right direction. Hopefully, he'll be able to build off it.
Yeah, 100%. Now, this is only the third game for Markkanen this season where he shot 50% or better, which is, sums up his play really. Like we're 15 games in and he's only had 3 games where he's only shot 50% or better. That's pretty poor. But it was also his 6th game with 40% better. So, given all that, his shooting obviously has been bad. He's predominantly a shooter, and if that's all you're really giving, and that's all you really are, and you're not really giving anything more than that, then obviously that is problematic. But we all know about Lowry's struggles thus far. But it was nice to see him getting that 24 points, 7 of 14 shooting, 3 from 4 from the 3-point line. Importantly as well, got to the foul line 11 times. A lot of that was due to the Pistons being dumbasses, I guess, by fouling Lowry behind the 3-point line. So we'll definitely take those 3 easy points for Markkanen. But I think as well, the fact that Satoransky was aggressive was just something he needs to be more generally. But the fact that he was sort of looking out and trying to get Lowry involved in the game early on, I don't think it was a coincidence that Lowry had his best game since opening night. Given that Satoransky was sort of funneling the ball to him early, he had 7 quick points. Satoransky had 3 assists, many of them coming off Markkanen. So I think that was a factor as well.
Yeah, Satoransky had a really nice game. Like you mentioned, just kind of setting the table early, and then he kind of helped put the game away with a couple 3-pointers late. He had 15, 7, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. It's basically a solid game from up and down the roster, mostly except for Zach LaVine, who was absolutely bad. And like Zach has been just bad, I guess, in general a lot. Because we've talked about Markkanen a lot, but Zach had a tough night. But yeah, it was nice to see Satoransky play well. We saw some of the guards off the bench play pretty well again. Chris Dunn had another pretty solid game. Arch hit a couple 3-pointers. Kobe White went 3 of 3 from 3. So yeah, it's a pretty solid game from the guards outside of Zach LaVine.
What do we make of LaVine at this point? Because it wasn't just, you know, he had a bad shooting night, 2 from 11 from the field. That'll happen occasionally. But this, I guess his decision-making, which again has been a problem this season, that was pretty bad in this game as well. There was one point where Shaq Harrison did Shaq Harrison things. He made a defensive stop, hustled his ass off, got the ball back, got the ball to Zach LaVine, who had Satoransky streaming up ahead, and all he really needed to do was throw a basic pass, but for whatever reason, he just threw the ball out of bounds, missed Satoransky by a mile. I don't know what he was actually trying to do, but it was just weird things like that. It just clearly, I mean, we talk about Blake Griffin being maybe not engaged. Certainly that was the case for Andre Drummond, but it kind of felt that way for Zach LaVine too. He didn't seem like he was in this game at all.
Yeah, this has been a thing all year too, just missing shots around the rim. He had a few nice drives where he got all the way to the rim. And then he just missed them. He got drew no fouls. He took zero free throws. So 2 of 11 from the field. He was 1 of 8 on two-pointers. And like I said, again, a lot of those were right at the rim. Maybe you could argue he could have gotten fouls called, but I feel like there were none where it was like super egregious. And I'm pretty sure that's been an issue all year. His finishing around the rim has not been up to par. He's been getting blocked a lot around the rim. I believe his free-throw attempts for the season are down. So just overall, he has not been good. I mean, again, going back to that Bucks game as well, when him and Lowry came back in the game, when the game was basically hanging in the balance, and those two basically helped the Bulls choke it down the stretch. And we've seen LaVine win a few games with some tough shooting down the stretch, but we've also seen him with a ton of bad decisions, just struggling to finish. I mean, his overall numbers this year are pretty sure way worse than last year. Like, coming into tonight's game, he was 21-4-4, which is, I guess, the rebounds and assists are about the same, but the scoring is down, the efficiency is down, and obviously that doesn't even include tonight's game. I haven't seen his updated stats yet, but that whole All-Star campaign that he was pushing and the Bulls were pushing, and I had totally bought into the hype. Like, unless he really turns around in a big way fast, that is about dead already 15 games into the season.
Yeah, I mean, if the Bulls remain one of the worst teams in the East, then it's pretty much dead based on that alone.
I'm pretty sure they're ninth right now in the East, though, dude. They're like a game out of the eighth seed because the East is a joke.
It really is. I want to talk about the schedule a little bit later because I think there's a chance here for the Bulls to get some winning going, assuming they're good enough. But, I mean, yeah, that is a fair point. The East is just ridiculously bad. But, yeah, I don't know what he's up with Zach LaVine. And I feel kind of stupid and embarrassed for buying into the LaVine hype earlier in the season because it felt like something was real based on the way he was going about it in preseason. I think it was justifiable that we felt he had improved from last season. And I thought he had a pretty decent season last season as well, given that he was coming back from the ACL. But yeah, for whatever reason, he just doesn't have it right now. But zero free throw attempts. And during the game, I don't know what maybe looked this up, but maybe it was the fact that he got blocked. But anecdotally, it always felt like he gets blocked a ton, maybe more so than a lot of the rest of the players in the league. And I looked it up during the game, and there was one point when Andre Drummond blocked Zach LaVine, and that was actually the 23rd time that LaVine had been blocked this season, which is just behind Colin Sexton and Ja Morant, two inexperienced players who are obviously still learning their way in the game, but Zach obviously in year six at this point. But for whatever reason, when he drives, he's just basically going for that straight line drive, and he doesn't really have the ability to change direction or to throw a hesitation in there, or even just to drive and look as, or to make a drive to be that passer. He looks like he makes his decision before he makes the drive, and he's just going in there gung-ho and just trying to make the play over these bigs. And a lot of the time he's getting blocked. But I want to talk about LaVine's shot profile because it's a thing that, well, it's a narrative that continues to be a talking point for some, at least. I won't name any names, but it's just weird because he's taking his shots from the right spots, which is what you want to see. But at the same time, I think we were having this conversation on Twitter the other day. Yep. You can argue that some of the shots that he is taking in these specific zones, maybe some of these shots are bad shots. 80% of his shots are either coming at rim or from the three-point line. But it does feel like some of the time that these shots are forced shots. He's taking the right shots as such, or at least from the right zones, but the shots that he's creating in those zones are pretty bad.
Yeah, I think one of the things we were talking about is maybe he could turn some of those contested shots at the rim that he's missing into more open mid-range shots. Obviously, the mid-range thing has been like a huge talking point, blah, 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 about that. I don't think any of us want him to we want him to get rid of like the early clock contested like pull-ups and fadeaways. But there are times when like if he's like probing the defense off like a pick and roll, and if he can pull up right into an easy like 15-foot mid-range shot, absolutely, take that. Like, we don't want the contested ones. We don't want the fadeaways over with like early in the clock or whatever. But if you have an open mid-range shot, absolutely, Zach LaVine should take those shots. So maybe if he can work maybe a little better with the in-between stuff instead of just like forcing stuff into the rim, that's the kind of stuff that he should be doing, whether it's maybe getting a floater. I feel like he doesn't really put up that many floaters. Because I feel like he when he goes in the rim in the paint like that, he ends up trying to take it all the way, and we've just seen him really struggle. I mean, right now he is shooting exactly 50% at the rim. He's only 4 of 25 non-rim paint shot. So clearly he's got no in-between game there. He doesn't really have like a floater he can rely on or anything like that. He's 11 of 23 from mid-range. So he is shooting well from mid-range. I do think that's probably because he's picking his spots clearly when he's only got 23 attempts from there. But I mean, he could take more of them if they're like open off pick and roll, if teams are giving it to him, he can take those. Or he's just gotta get a floater or some type of shot in the paint when he's not going all the way into the trees. Because right now, I'm assuming the finishing will kind of come around, and this might just be like a down point for him. But clearly, I think some of it probably has to do with just forcing shots in there when it's not in there, and when he could use a shot maybe a little further out.
Yeah, definitely. He certainly does need more variation to his dribble drive game. I think you could say the same thing about Kobe White. He too gets blocked quite often, but they just feel like they're straight line drivers. They don't have that in between game, as you mentioned. They don't have that floater game. There's no hesitation or ability to sort of break guys off the bounce and maybe, you know, implement a Euro step of sorts or some sort of spin move or whatever it may be, whatever the move is. It kind of feels like he's just got one option when he's sort of driving to the basket. But it's been problematic for LaVine, but he was actually quite good at rim last season. So I guess there is upside. We've seen him do it, so maybe he can turn it around. But a bit of a concerning game for LaVine. Only 5 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, didn't do much else. Probably didn't really need to come back in the fourth quarter, but he got back on the court. But I want to talk about the rest of the Bulls, maybe talk about Satoransky. I want to definitely talk about that wing rotation because it's a bit of a weird one going forward. But before I do, let me tell the listeners about this week's sponsor. The holidays are almost here, and you know what that means? Gifts. And what better gift to give a guy in your life than a stylish shirt that fits just right? Unlike most brands, untucked shirts are actually designed to be worn untucked. Untucked shirts always fall at that just right length, no matter his size, so he looks casual and sharp. I don't know about you guys, but if you've bought shirts online just like I have, often the case is you get a shirt that looks nice in the picture, but the length of the shirt isn't what you had in mind, the material may not be exactly what you thought you'd be getting when you purchased it online. But in my experience with Untucked, I've never had that issue before. The shirt always fits the way I thought it would, it hangs the way I thought it would, and the material and quality of the shirt is always top notch. With more than 50 fit combinations, Untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. You can find your favorite Untucked style online or check out one of their 80 brick and mortar stores. Choose from styles like a wrinkle-free button-down, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untucked, your shirts will never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or even too big again. And best of all, their website is easy to use. They even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart and relaxed style of your own, Untucked is the way to go. Visit untucked.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untucked.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off. All right, back to the podcast now. And Jason, I want to talk more about Satoransky because I think with LaVine being as bad as he was in this game offensively, this could have been a game where if Sato was his passive self, as we've sort of seen in the previous 14 games, that this could have been maybe a lot closer. We talked about the Pistons looking pretty damn bad and the Pistons being bad in this game, but there were points where they were actually leading in the game or if the Bulls were leading, it was a single-digit lead sort of thing. So had Satoransky not come out and been aggressive, then this game may have been a lot closer than what it ended up being. But what did you like from Satoransky from today against the Pistons, and do you think he can keep this up going forward in terms of his aggression and being more of a focal point in the offense itself?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned just kind of setting the tone early on with the playmaking and stuff like that. And I feel like he's kind of done that a lot where he kind of starts the game. I think, was it the last game against the Bucks where he came out and like scored the first 5 points? And then he just kind of goes away and like over the, like, by like the second half, he's just like a complete non-factor. In this game today, he started well, but then he also had some big baskets in the second, quote-unquote big baskets. It obviously really wasn't a competitive game, but he did hit a few threes again to basically make sure that there was no Pistons comeback, even though I don't think anything was going to, there was nothing going on there for the Pistons. But then he had a nice game over the course of the game. We haven't really seen that much this year. We saw it in that Hawks game where he outplayed Trae Young, where he put up, I think, 27 points. That was a career game. But we need to see him not only come out and be aggressive like he does, like, for, like, the first, his first stint. We also need to see that over the course of a full game, because he's obviously a good player. He's an efficient player. He's a smart player. We saw him do really well playing, leading his team at the FIBA World Cup. Like, I feel like we know he's got it in him. Naturally, he's never going to be a guy where you're going to pass him the ball and he's going to go, like, just go off and, like, have huge games all the time. That's not what we should expect from him, but he is better than I think than what he has shown. I know Boylan has talked about it, how he's got to play with a little more thrust, be a little more aggressive, and just maintain that aggressiveness throughout the full game instead of just kind of starting with it and then just kind of falling back. Because one of the reasons I thought Satoransky would be a really nice fit in the starting lineup was, well, he wouldn't be like a high usage guy. He'd just be a solid, smart player who could knock down threes, play off Zach LaVine. But with LaVine really struggling right now and Lowry struggling a bit, I think we need to see a bit more out of Satoransky. And I do think he's got it in him. We just got to see it a bit more.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. And had he been a bit more passive today, and maybe if he doesn't get out there and start the way he did and connect with Lowry the way he did, then maybe this game, the result of it looks a little bit different. So, yeah, it is interesting. But at the same time, I kind of feel like Boylan has been jerking Satoransky around a little bit, because he only had 18 minutes against the Bucks, which is kind of weird considering that Chris Dunn played 25, Ryan Arcidiacono 27 minutes against the Bucks on Monday, and then Kobe White had 25 as well. So he's sort of more reliant on his reserves at this point, and I don't think Satoransky was that bad to only warrant 17, 18 minutes against the Bucks. And we talked about him getting off to a good start against the Bucks, but it's hard to come back and you know, continue on that rhythm when you're not actually being given minutes. Yeah. So there have been games this season, where he's been playing either high teens or low 20s in minutes, which is kind of weird. But, I mean, Jim Boylan's rotations in general are weird, which is probably a good segue into the next point that I wanted to make. We've already roughly touched on it, but obviously Shaq Harrison got the start today because Chandler Hutchinson was out for this game with sore shins, and obviously Otto Porter has missed the last six games with his foot issue. That is going to be a lingering problem for the next few weeks based on what Boylan has said. So Shaq Harrison looks like he will be the starting small forward at this point. I guess we'll see if Chandler Hutchinson can return on the weekend, but I wouldn't be surprised at this point if Shaq Harrison starts even when Hutchinson is back. But I wanted to talk about the wing rotation. We talked about Harrison's game, but what do you make about the way Boylan is handling his sort of wing rotation? And I go back to that Bucks game as well, where Ryan Arcidiacono played the last 16 minutes of the game, which was kind of insane. And maybe that's odd for me to say, given how much I love Ryan Arcidiacono, but it's kind of ridiculous the way this whole wing rotation is being managed at this point, when Hutchinson has only been playing 22 minutes in the last five games prior to being hurt. Obviously, Shaq Harrison came into the starting lineup today. He was probably the Bulls' best player, maybe beyond Lowry Markkanen. I guess that's fair to say. He had the 26 minutes today, but Denzel Valentine couldn't get a look for whatever reason against this bad Pistons team. Yeah, well, what do you make about the whole wing rotations, Boylan's decision-making, and his whole handling of the wing rotation itself?
Clearly, Denzel is in the doghouse. He couldn't even get out for garbage time. Like, in the last, 2 minutes, he wouldn't even play then. And like, clearly, I don't know if Boylan's trying to send a message to him. He just doesn't want to play him at all. Like, I mean, clearly there's something going on there where he just has no interest in playing Denzel. Because he had that snippy answer, like, a week ago, and, like, asked him, like, you couldn't even put Denzel out there at the end of a blowout. He said, oh, just didn't want to do it. Like, clearly there's something going on there. I'm really curious why. I mean, not that Denzel Valentine's going to be some, like, huge help. I mean, he might be able to help somewhat. Like, I mean, he hasn't played in a long time, like, real minutes. He is a good shooter. He's a decent playmaker, decent rebounder for his position. So the fact that he just can't even get off the bench in garbage time is kind of wild. You talk about the Arcidiacono and, like, Kobe White stuff and these, like, long stretches where, like, they're playing, like, whatever, 15 straight minutes to close games. Like, that's outrageous. I know you wrote about that at Bloggable. I mentioned it. I wrote something about Otto Porter Jr.'s injury and how it's kind of leading to these long stretches of minutes for these undersized guards. Like, God bless Ryan Arcidiacono. Like, he plays his ass off all the time. He's shooting, like, 50% from three this year. We know how hard he tries, but just, like, if Ryan Arcidiacono is playing 25 minutes a game and he's closing out games against the Milwaukee Bucks, like, you're not going anywhere. Like, he's a bench player. He's like, I feel like every team should want a guy like him with just the way he hustles. Giannis gave him some love after the game, kind of threw some shade at the rest of the roster, kind of saying, oh yeah, Arch tries, but, like, nobody else really does, which isn't totally fair. But Yeah, I mean, clearly Boylan has his favorites. He loves Arch. He's given Kobe White a lot of minutes. He seems like he doesn't love Hutch that much. I mean, Hutch isn't very good, but I mean, he's the kind of guy, he does play hard and he defends. So like, I thought maybe he would get maybe some more minutes. Obviously he's hurt now, but clearly he loves Arch. He loves Shaq Harrison. Tonight's game against the Pistons was like a game where you could easily get away with playing Shaq Harrison at the three and the lineup the Bulls did, because again, the Pistons had Luke Kennard, Bruce Brown, and Langston Galloway as their three guards. So just absolutely awful. Like, you don't have to worry about them. And Shaq, I feel like really not on the scouting report. So he can kind of surprise them, if you will, just like with his energy, especially against a team that didn't have a point guard out there. So with no like legitimate ball handlers and creators, like Shaq Harrison could do some damage against that. But if you're going to, once the Bulls play, I mean, just look at, they're playing the Heat coming up. They're playing Jimmy Butler, and the Heat are playing great. Jimmy, like Duncan Robinson hit 8 threes today. Kendrick Nunn's been playing great. Like, they got Goran Dragic off the bench. They got a deep roster. I think they're like 10 or 11 and 3 right now. Like, that might not work so much with Shaq Harrison playing the 3. Like, we'll see. It's going to be a really good test, but I mean, I know there's obviously, we talked about how the wing depth was going to be a problem coming in, and now like the worst fears are being realized with Porter missing extended time and now Hutch as well. So I mean, they're just going to have to make do with what they got, and we're going to see a lot of Arch and Shaq and Kobe White and Chris Dunn. So we'll see. At least Chris Dunn's been playing better off the bench. I've really liked him much better in his role as a bench guy.
Yeah, he's been one of the better stories this season. But I guess what's funny to me is Boylan is quick to tell us all that he, management, anyone that I guess is connected to the Bulls, Bryce, they're all so aligned and they've never been more aligned, blah, blah, blah. He's quick to mention that in the press, as he did today, actually, before the Pistons game, which is kind of odd to me because I guess you can read into that in a number of ways, but I guess one way you could read into it is maybe management is having their say in terms of rotations, or at least sort of, you know, putting their input into that space, which is kind of weird if you sort of think that that's sort of playing out, that they wouldn't want Chandler Hutchinson playing more than 22 minutes a game, particularly when Otto Porter is out, given that they drafted him in the first round last season. He was the promise, the prince that was promised as such. He was the piece that came back for Nikola Mirotic. And with Otto Porter out, he's the lone actual small forward in the rotation, given that Porter's out. So like, it's weird that he wouldn't be getting some developmental minutes more generally, but the fact that he is the lone wing on the team, that kind of doesn't make sense. And what he brings to the table, the fact that he's a defensive player, he's a rebounder, they're things this Bulls team needs. So it is weird that he's not playing and Boylan is rolling out with his favorites. But I guess what made it even more weird today was the fact that Kobe White wasn't even going to play in this game, given that he sprayed his ankle prior to the game in warm-up. So he was a game-time decision. He ended up playing. He had 12 points. So he looked okay out there. But you would think, even given the fact that he missed, or was potentially going to miss this game, that in the final couple of minutes, instead of putting Kobe White back out there, maybe you would throw Denzel Valentine out there. I mean, the Pistons' backup wings at this point are Markieff Morris and Zvi Mykhailiuk. I mean, Mykhailiuk played 14 minutes for the Pistons. He's like less athletic than Denzel at this point. So, yeah, it's bizarre. It's weird. Clearly, Boylan doesn't like Valentine for whatever reason. He's this season's Jabari Parker, but it's just a weird situation, to the point where I'm wondering like what the point of Denzel even being on this roster is at this point. He's obviously a restricted free agent in June. Why even waste time with him? I mean, just trade him, waive him, do something, and use that roster spot on an actual wing that you can put into the rotation of sorts. Take a chance on someone that's not in the league. Maybe sign someone, or put one of your two-way guys up. I mean, Max Strauss, he was part of the rotation. It was up with the Bulls today, didn't get any minutes, but like, I just don't get it, I guess is my point. And I can't believe I'm waxing poetic here about Denzel Valentine for the last 5 minutes, but it's just odd. It's just weird.
Yeah, I'm guessing maybe because he was basically like a borderline lottery. Was he a lottery pick? He was 14th, right? So at the very end of the lottery, something like that.
Yeah, 14th or 16th, yeah. One of the two.
Like,
yeah.
I just don't know if they just like don't want to like admit that mistake and totally bail on him, especially because he missed all of last year and they want to like see him work into shape and prove it. Like, obviously we don't know everything that's going on like behind the scenes there, but it is definitely bizarre. I mean, the fact that he didn't even get on the court in garbage time is absolutely bizarre. Like, why is Kobe White going back out there when he's had the supposedly had the sprained ankle? Like, that's like a perfect timer. Just let him have a break. You get Denzel out there for a few minutes. So I didn't see if anybody asked about that after the game yet. I'll definitely will try to look out for that. But yeah, that just makes absolutely no sense. And like the point about, yeah, like trade, I mean, no one's going to trade you anything for him. And like, he's a guarantee, he's got a guaranteed contract in the last year of his rookie deal. Like, they probably just don't want to eat that money. But like, yeah, if he's just using this roster spot, like, and he's not going to play him, like, I mean, that's basically two wasted roster spots with Felicio there as well. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's weird. It's strange. But enough talk about Denzel Valentine. It's more than enough. But I guess before we move on, just a quick shout out to Wendell Carter, who again just put up a double-double. Unsung hero of this Bulls team thus far this season, 12 points, 15 rebounds, slowly becoming one of the better offensive rebounders in the NBA. He had 5 offensive rebounds, which is pretty damn good. I understand that the Pistons front court looked disengaged, so maybe that helped Wendell crash the boards, but he had 5 offensive rebounds, 15 in total, and maybe it's a lot easier to grab those rebounds when the Pistons are missing a bunch of shots as they were today. But shout out to Wendell Carter. Unfortunately, we didn't get the same Daniel Gafford game that we got against the Bucks. He was a pretty damn amazing against the Bucks, but only the 2 points tonight against the Pistons. Maybe came back to earth, and maybe the Pistons scouted him a lot better they than did. What the Bucks did. And you pretty much only have to watch out for his role game on offense. But I guess he's in the rotation, which is a plus, given that Luke Kornet is out now. Well, out of the rotation more generally, but the fact that he's sort of missing games now with the sinus. Well, he had sinus surgery, I think it was. So he'll be missing time, but he's probably out of the rotation regardless. But what were your quick thoughts about Daniel Gafford from maybe not this Pistons game, given he didn't do much, but maybe that Bucks game?
Yeah, it's clearly, I think Gafford just kind of took the Bucks by surprise, and the Bulls were basically just doing whatever they could to get him lobs, throw it up by the rim. He was rolling and he was getting it. It was really nice to see him have that performance. He also just had a few nice finishes just in general, even when they weren't lobs. So that was really nice to see. Obviously, again, yeah, once you scout him, because he doesn't really have any skills besides like jumping and dunking. Like I said, he had a few nice finishes, but like, and once you get him a few feet away from the basket, he can't really do much. So once teams scout that role a bit, take that away, he won't be as effective. But then once if teams do that, that should open up things elsewhere for maybe three-point shooters or guys driving to the rim. They get buckets. Tonight against the Pistons, we definitely saw, I think, Drummond had a few nice plays. Just they clearly were waiting or anticipating for those lobs. They knocked a few away. I think the Bulls were also trying to force a few of them in there, and the Pistons did a really nice job just kind of knocking those away. He did have a few nice blocks, though. He blocked Andre Drummond up against the rim with a really nice play. I think he might have blocked Rose as well on a drive. I can't remember exactly, but he did have 2 blocks. He did also have a nice putback on a miss, so he still did a few nice things, even though the Pistons kind of took away that lob game. But yeah, it was just nice to see him get him out there, because I feel like after Kornet was just absolutely terrible for the first like couple weeks or what, yeah, that he was playing, and everyone was like, where's Gafford? Like, get Kornet out of here, especially because if the Bulls were when they were playing that just like super aggressive defensive like the trapping and stuff like that, and Kornet just clearly couldn't handle it. Gafford is a guy, like, if you're going to do that trap, like, Gafford, I know he's a rookie big, but at least he's athletic, he can move his feet a bit more, so it was just kind of bizarre that they hadn't given him that chance. It was nice to see him get that chance, and yeah, from now on, at this point, I would assume Gafford will be in the rotation over Kornet. Maybe they'll try Kornet in certain matchups moving forward. Having a stretch five out there can be useful at times, for sure, in playing the five-out offense, and I feel like Kornet's better than what he has shown, because I feel like he just wasn't being used properly with the defensive scheme. But yeah, I hope Gafford, for the most part, gets the minutes of the rotation at this point moving forward.
Yeah, 100% agree. I not to be a Kornet apologist, because no one wants to hear that at this point, but yeah, he was clearly mismanaged. But I still think Gafford is pretty raw at this point. He probably won't play too many minutes going forward. I'll assume, like the Pistons did, once you scout him on offense and just got to protect that role, then he's pretty easy to take out of the game. But this is the type of matchup against the Pistons where it makes sense to get him out there, because they don't really have many center options beyond Andre Drummond, I guess. And when you have a matchup where you got like that rolling big, then that's the kind of the matchup that you can actually put someone like Daniel Gafford out there, even if he is raw and inexperienced and still clearly learning the game. But yeah, he was great against the Bucks. Hopefully we get a little bit more consistency from him. But again, second round rookie, we can't be expecting too much. But yeah, great game from him against the Bucks. But the last note, Jason, that I wanted to make about this game before we talk about the upcoming schedule, and we'd be remiss not to discuss this, was the fact that this was, I guess, the official send-off for Luol Deng. It was his retirement night, so to speak. He was welcomed back into Chicago. Obviously, a few months ago, he signed made that ceremonial signing for that one day with the Bulls to retire as a Bull. It was made official today at the United Center. He got the send-off that he deserved in front of all the fans there at the United Center. It made sense to do it today. He wanted to do it today against the Pistons with Derek back in town. But it wasn't just Derek and Lou back in the building. Joakim Noah was there. Ben Gordon was there. Tyrus Thomas. There was a bunch of other Bulls as well.
Aaron Gray, my guy.
Aaron Gray, for whatever reason. John Lucas was there. Yes. But yeah, it was weird to see all those old Bulls, but it was good to see them on that note, given that Lou was being sent off on the right note. But it's weird because I still have more of a feeling and nostalgia for those old Bulls than I do for this current iteration, which is somewhat bittersweet. But it was nice to see Lou, well, retire as a Bull to get that respect and that send off that he did get.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'm kind of shocked that Lou is like so forgiving and just like really still into the Bulls, considering they like almost killed him. But Lou Aldang, just a solid two-way player for so long for the Bulls. Never a superstar type. He had his flaws as an offensive player. I know people complained about him with some of his offensive struggles, but just so solid for so long. He was an Iron Man when he played all those minutes for Tom Thibodeau. He goes down as one of the best Bulls of all time. Like you might not think about it because he was never flashy. He never put up huge numbers, but with the longevity, with just the solid play for so long, he's one of the best Bulls of all time. Like maybe top 15, top 10, just because he was around for so long, just a solid player for so long. So it was great to see Lou back, and he's obviously just a really good guy as well. Does a lot of great like humanitarian work and all that kind of stuff. So awesome to see Lou Aldang, and awesome to see all those other guys. Just I love Ben Gordon. We all love Joakim Noah, the Tyrus Thomas. Like that was, and Aaron Gray. Like, that's just so funny to see some of those old guys back in the building. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned like the nostalgia for those old teams as well. Because those teams won games. They were relatable. They were easy to root for because they played hard. They defended. They won. They won a good amount of games. So we're obviously hoping that this Bulls team, I don't know if it's this Bulls team, but sometime in the future, the Bulls get back to winning a lot of games and being easy to root for.
Yeah, for sure. It's just weird, though, to see the United Center, the most hyped it gets is when Derek checks in and they're screaming MVP, or when Joakim sort of comes up on the big screen and they're going nuts in that occasion, but then they're not necessarily cheering from the encore product. And I guess justifiably, there's not much to cheer about the current iteration of this team right now. I mean, the Bulls are 5-10. There's not going to be too many moments where it's, you know, there's justifiably reasons for fans to be cheering out there, but it is kind of odd to see the old crew still get more love than the new guys. But it was nice to see Dang and Rose and the rest of the gang out there. But it was a good send off for Lou. But before we close, Jason, I wanted to quickly talk about the schedule, because I think for the next maybe 5 to 10 games at least, it opens up for the Bulls a little bit. We talked about just before how trash the rest of the Eastern Conference is, and coming up for the Bulls the next two games, they've got a game against the Heat, which is going to be tough. It's at the United Center on Friday night, but that will be a tough game with Jimmy returning back to the United Center. I don't know if he'll get the same amount of love as those previous Bulls, but I will certainly be cheering on Jimmy Butler at that point. But the next night on Saturday, the Bulls will hit the road against the Charlotte Hornets, an opportunity to make good for that, you know, terrible loss that they had on opening night. But thereafter, in years past, these games would have been definite L's. But given how bad the Blazers and the Warriors have been, the next three games for the Bulls are the Portland Trail Blazers on Monday. Then they hit the road on Wednesday to face the Warriors in Golden State. Then they play the Blazers again on Friday on the road. So those are three potential wins for the Bulls. They'll get a chance to go up against former Bulls legend Carmelo Anthony as well. But the next five games, I'm going to pencil it in as a loss against the Heat, but there's a chance that they could go maybe 4-0 against those other teams, given how bad those teams have been.
So I would still expect them to lose in Portland. As long as Lillard and CJ are playing, the Bulls always have a tough time. I mean, it's a tough place to play in general. I know the Blazers have been bad. But yeah, I mean, you got to beat the Warriors. The Warriors are a joke. They're all injured. That's a game you got to win. And then, you probably should beat the Blazers at home. Like, I don't want to pen any wins in at this point, because just like, I've done that for so many games already this season, and then they've ended up losing. Like even at Hornets, like, that's a game they should win as well. And I said that for the first game of the year, I thought the Bulls were going to beat them by double digits, and then they lose. They've lost to the Knicks. They've lost to the Cavs. So they've lost all these bad games where you say, yeah, they should win all these games. I'm not going to pencil any of them in, but yeah, it does give them a good chance. Because yeah, in the past, if this was last year, you think they're going to lose all these games when you're playing the Blazers and the Warriors. So they have a little opportunity here, and especially like the West Coast trip has always looked so daunting. But with the Warriors looking worse, the Blazers looking worse, I think they have like the Kings coming up too. Like they're playing a bit better, but I know they don't have like De'Aaron Fox. So yeah, I mean, a decent opportunity to at least maybe get back in it. And we talk about the East being bad. They're still right. Like, I feel like the Bulls are going to, even if they're like on pace for like mid to low 30s in wins, I think they still might be in the race all season. Like the bottom of the East is just that rough. Like maybe the Nets get it together. Like maybe the I think the Magic, they've been playing a little better, but I feel like no one's really going to separate that much from down there. So if the Bulls take care of business against some of these bad teams, they're going to be right in the mix probably for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't beaten anyone that's above 500 right, yeah. at this point, so they're still not a good team. But maybe it's just me trying to justify my existence over the next coming months here, given that we pour so much energy into this Bulls team. We would want to see some wins, but if they can go 3-2 yeah, over the next five, absolutely. Get back to 8-12, yeah. then slowly but surely they're getting closer to 500. And we've all talked about the schedule at the back half of the year. That's going to be kind of brutal, so they need to sort of rack up these W's now. But yeah, I don't even know if it's about getting to the playoffs at this point for me. It's just, I just want to watch some semblance of decent basketball. So I think there's a chance here for the next, you know, week and a half for the team to get their shit in order if they can actually be good enough to do it. Let's see what happens. But they're obviously missing Otto Porter and maybe Chandler Hutchinson, and that may make things a little bit more difficult. But there's some upside, I guess. There's some hope, but maybe I'm just, again, trying to justify that to myself. But we'll see what happens. It all starts on Friday night against Jimmy and the Heat. That should be a fun game to watch. But, mate, I appreciate you coming on. And in the rare chance Bulls fans aren't tuning into Cash Considerations or aren't following you online, where can they do so?
Obviously, listen to Cash Considerations. Me and Ricky O'Donnell shooting the shit about the Bulls. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_J, and then you can follow my Bulls writing at Blogable. Wrote a recap about the Pistons game tonight. Forbes, and then do some NBA Bulls Pacers betting stuff at both Bet Chicago and then Bet Indiana. Kind of just a combined website there. So and also check out ClutchPoints.com as well. So yeah, bunch of places.
Perfect. You're everywhere. I appreciate you coming on, mate. Thank you for breaking down this game with me. And I'm just glad we were able to talk about a win for a change.
Yeah, if they would have lost this one, it would have been like full-blown panic mode. Just how bad the Pistons look and how bad they are.
Definitely, definitely. But we avoided that. But yeah, thanks again, mate.
Yep, thanks. Have a good one.
Bulls fans, thank you for tuning into this episode of Bulls HQ. That just about does it for this one. Follow me online while you're at it. Hit me up on Twitter at MKHoops. Follow the show on Twitter too at BullsHQPod. If you want to send me an email or be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, send me an email, BullsHQPod@gmail.com. But I mentioned the games that are coming up this weekend. Jimmy and the Heat on Friday night. Then we've got the Hornets on Saturday. We'll be back to recap those games and talk all things Bulls on Monday. But until then, this has been Bulls HQ. Thank you for listening. Speak soon.